This is Holiday Readings and Remembrances, a series of reflections on the season by members of the Northern Michigan University community and local and area residents. Today, we'll hear from Public Radio 90's Hans Ahlstrom with a story called Our Old World Christmas in 1970s Chicago.
Christmas always started right after Thanksgiving. Not like today, where the stores changed everything over to Christmas things, with Santa Claus all over the place and candy canes, and buy this or that as a Christmas present. And also on television, where all the commercials related to Christmas. No, Christmas always started when we would drive around the neighborhood or walk through the neighborhood, and we would see that everyone had already set up their Christmas tree. It was only the 30th of November or the 1st of December or somewhere in there, and all the trees were up. We were from the old world, and in our home we still did a lot of old world things. And for my father, the tradition was very important that we didn't start Christmas until Christmas. So in a sense, our Christmas tradition started when we saw everyone else had started. And what we did that related to Christmas had to do with the Advent. Sunday morning breakfasts with the Advent calendars. A fine cast iron candelabra with four tiered candles. One lit on the first Sunday, two on the second Sunday, and so forth until the fourth Sunday. We also had an Advent calendar for kids. My sister and I would always rush to open the next day's door and see what was behind it in the Christmas scene. The ones that just had a present wrapped, that was boring. You wanted to see a character. And of course, Christmas Eve was always Santa Claus or perhaps a Christ figure or something like that. And then we had, which I didn't see anyone else have, I don't even know what we called it, but I call it an Advent candy calendar. Something from the old world again. 24 days, 24 rings. And on each ring, my mother would tie with thread two pieces of hard candy. Usually the anise hard candies that we loved. And so each day my sister and I would get one candy each and count down the days and get our little candy each and every day. As the month of December wore on, Mom would start making other preparations for Christmas. She'd start baking, choose a weekend at some point, and make cookies and meatballs, sausage, and liver pate, or in Danish, leverpostej. Her cookies were great. I've never tasted them anywhere else. Which, of course, means that they're just Mom's, but I'm sure that people in the old country eat them all over the place. She had two types that she made. 1, 2, 3 cookies, which were dead simple. Basically, it's sugar, butter, and flour. And I didn't learn until I was much older that that's just the shortbread. But they're 1, 2, 3, or ain't to tight cow, as my mom would say. And she'd just throw those together and keep us at bay by giving us a pinch here and a pinch there of dough, which was always wonderful. When we grew up, she'd make some. Of course, we were away from home. She'd make some and save some dough for us in the fridge that we could eat when we would come home for Christmas. The other cookies were the exact opposite. They were more exotic and took much longer to make. She called them Pumpernickel. And I've been searching for her recipe for a few years, trying to figure out how she made these. And I finally found it in her scrawl with old world measurements and an ingredient that I'd never seen before called potaske, or potash. And I looked it up and it seemed like some dangerous chemical. And I thought, that's probably not it. But it did turn out to be an ingredient. Don't know what it does, but I found it at a Scandinavian deli, prepackaged already, to throw in with your cookies. And when I did finally make the cookies this year, something didn't taste quite right. And I've decided that it was the potaska, because I don't remember Mom ever using it. But what I did find out this year is that her pumpernickel were like biscottis. Very, very heavy dough that you'd roll out in a big snake and flatten just slightly and bake for a while, and then you'd slice it up, and she would take a big cookie sheet and line up these sliced pumpernickel on their sides, and it would be like soldiers, just a whole rack of these pumpernickel, and rebake them, and then even let them sit out for a while, because I guess they had to be totally void of any moisture. And they were wonderful. But the leopostei, that was the big thing, the liver pate. Of course, we hated liver, but leopostei was good. Don't know why. Don't know what went into it. Maybe part of what made it really good was the sweat that was put into it. I got to help, but I don't know how much help I was. We had a kitchen stool, a wooden kitchen stool that now is rather rickety and wouldn't be able to stand up to the job. And she would take her cast iron meat grinder, hand meat grinder, and fasten it to one edge of the kitchen stool, the opposite edge of the steps. And there she would grind the meat over and over, and I would get to stand on the steps, or when I was older, perhaps just hold down the stool while she would pump that handle, grinding the meat through and through. She did that also with her Danish meatballs, frikadeller, that were wonderful. And leverpostej was an all-day kind of thing. So were the cookies. So that was a whole weekend where Mom was making things for Christmas. And meanwhile, we still drove around the neighborhoods and saw everybody's trees up. Not so many lights outside the house. Mostly it seemed that in the 60s and 70s, at least in my neighborhood in Chicago, in Hyde Park, I don't remember seeing that many lights outside, maybe on some businesses. Most people had their trees up in the window so that everyone could see. And most people had colored lights. We didn't have colored lights. But we didn't put our tree up in the beginning of December either. So we did things differently, as I said. Of course, looking forward to Christmas always means you've got to buy presents. And as a kid, you don't know what to buy your parents as a present. You usually go shopping with one parent and they help you, or they simply buy for you something for the other present. But my mom was always good and let me pick out something for Dad. I don't remember ever buying him a tie. I know that's the stereotype, and I don't know how many people actually did buy ties for their dads, but I always wanted to buy him a pipe. Dad smoked pipes and cigars. And I hated cigars, so I wanted to buy him a pipe. It's my way of saying, Dad, please don't smoke any more cigars. They stink. They smell up the place, and the smoke never goes away. The pipe smells nice. You can smoke a pipe. I was giving him permission. Then again, I also put a sign on my bedroom door saying no smoking. And he would stand in the doorway, 1 foot in my room, 1 foot outside the room, cigar in the hand that was outside the room, and he would say to me, I'm not smoking in your room. And then he'd turn his head to the outside of the room and take a puff on his cigar and turn back to me and say, see, I'm not smoking in your room. When Dad got older, when I got older, of course, we both got older, I stopped buying him pipes. I think he had enough. And I found that, Dad was a professor, and one wall of our living room was a bookcase, the whole wall. And I think there were only two shelves that didn't have any books on them. So he had a lot of books. And I found that maybe buying him a book for Christmas would be something he would like. So I did. I found out that he really liked biographies. I would buy him a biography on Charles de Gaulle, a two-part biography on Winston Churchill, And he was amazing. He read them, you know, in one night. But he didn't seem too interested in Lawrence of Arabia. What was his name? Eliot? T. E. Eliot? That book sat on his table for a while and didn't seem to move. That was all right. And then there was Mom. What do you buy Mom? Well, I don't know. And I'm sure that my father, and later my sister, bought my presents for my mom until I was older and took a stab at it. But I'm not sure really what Mom really wanted. But that was okay, because I think she just simply enjoyed the event and the company and the time of year. Shopping was always a lot of fun, too, because you'd have to go downtown. Downtown Chicago on Michigan Avenue before north of the river became the big popular place to go. We'd go south of the river to Carson Perry Scott, which was always kind of the middle-class place to go, or to Marshall Fields a couple of blocks north, and that was the fancy place to go. And the cool thing was that if you walked on State Street along Marshall Fields, they decorated their windows with Christmas scenes that moved. Trains and electronic puppets that would move, and it was just great. And you'd, as a little kid, you'd kind of wiggle your way through the crowd to try to get up to the window to take your turn to stand on your tiptoes and see what was going on in the Christmas scene. And there was always too much going on. You couldn't drink it all in. That was a lot of fun when you're a little kid. I don't know if they still do that anymore. Marshall Fields has been sold, and right now I guess I hope they just still sell their Frango mints. But I don't even know if they do that anymore. So we'd go shopping downtown, which meant going in your heavy coat into Carson's or Marshall Fields, following Mom all the time, having to stand and wait for Mom while she was looking at something for somebody. It was never for me. It was always for somebody else. And it was always hot. And there were too many people. And then when we'd leave, you'd think you're going home, but you're not. You're just going to another store. That was the drag part of Christmas, so we won't spend any more time on that. But looking back, it was kind of fun. I guess in a sick and twisted way, looking back. But still, we didn't have our Christmas tree up, and it was getting later and later in the season. When do you put your Christmas tree up, really? Well, Dad was into many traditions. So was Mom. But Christmas trees, well, at least he was the one who talked about it. I don't know how much Mom talked about it, maybe because she was doing a lot of other stuff involved with Christmas. There are 12 days of Christmas, and Christmas Day is just the first of them. Christmas Day is not the last, it's the first. And what we do in our family is we celebrate Christmas on Christmas Eve, almost a way of kick-starting the 12 days of Christmas, and leaving Christmas Day for something a little bit more sacred, perhaps. We didn't really go to church that often. I know we did a little bit when I was a kid. But maybe it was just that the service was in English and my father would want it in Swedish or Latin or something. I don't know why we didn't go. But at least there was something sacred about the day, Christmas Day. So we celebrated on the 24th. And we didn't put our tree up until the 23rd of December. We didn't even buy it till about a week or two before Christmas. Again, Dad and I, we'd go walk 2, 3, 4, 5 blocks, however far it was, to the place that sold the right Christmas tree. And he'd always carry the heavy part, and I'd do my best to not get pricked by the needles and bring one of my heavier gloves, and I'd get to carry the other end, the top of the tree, and hopefully not bend the very top so that we still had a place to put the star. And then we'd walk home, usually in the snow. I don't know how much snow there is in December anymore in Chicago, but I remember walking through the snow several blocks home with the tree, and then we'd hoist it up on our balcony. usually Dad doing the hoisting, and when I was a little bit older and could hold it, I'd hold the tree until he'd run in the house and get up to the balcony, and then we'd heave it onto the balcony and let it sit there. That's where our tree stood. Everyone else's was in the window with lights, and ours was on the balcony, waiting for the 23rd. Finally, when we did bring it in, we brought it in on the morning of the 23rd, shook the snow off if there was any, put it up in the tree stand, which was always a series of you set it up, and then you stand back, and then you go back, and you adjust it, and Hans has to hold it, and Dad readjusts on the bottom, and then stand back again, and then readjust it again. I'm sure no one else does that. And then you let it sit for a few hours, until later in the afternoon, we would put on the lights. We always had clear lights, not the colored lights we saw everyone else using. We had clear lights, and they weren't just on a string. These were electric, Swedish electric candle lights. Looked like candles. White candles with a clear bulb on top, and on the bottom there was a clip that you would fasten to the tree. And we'd walk around the tree. I'd hold the box of lights, pulling out only two lights ahead of where Dad was, because we wouldn't want them to be dangling, and perhaps one would hit the floor, and the light would short out. And we didn't have too many replacement bulbs, so we had to be really careful with the lights. I didn't know that then, or didn't understand it, or didn't want to understand it. But I dutifully pulled one lamp, one light out at a time. And we'd walk around the tree, putting the lights on. So there weren't too many lights on the tree, and that was really nice. More nice for me now. When I'm older, I like to see just a few lights on the tree. And then the decorations, of course, were from the old country, including Danish hearts that are woven together and open so that you can put treats in them. Very common in the old country to leave treats, cookies especially, and little candies that the kids could go and eat once in a while. We didn't never put any treats in our hearts. I don't remember that. Mom was short-shifting us. Or maybe she just realized that they wouldn't last, and so why bother? But we had the hearts up, and strings of flags, Swedish flags, Danish flags, and a string that included all the flags of Scandinavia, which means Norwegian flags as well, but this string also included Finnish and Icelandic flags. And we decorated other things besides the tree. We had something that in Danish is called kavelnisser. They're little cutouts of Santa Claus and his elves. And they have a little flap on them that you can slide under a book. So the book holds it up on the bookcase. And our bookcase that covered the whole wall had all of these different kavelnisser. A big, fat, jolly Santa Claus. A little impish elf who was dropping a present. Another little elf who was leaning down, helping to pull up another elf who had fallen. Various characters all along our bookcase. We also had tomta, which are a Swedish tomte. What is a tomte? He's not an elf. I guess it's part of Swedish folklore. Comes around during Christmas time with a little red hat. He's not a gnome either. We had some of those on the table or on the bookcase. And of course there were candles all over the place. White candles, red candles, always candles lit during Christmas. And then of course on the 23rd of December there were the presents. They finally showed. In the evening, once the tree was decorated, everyone had taken part in decorating the tree. Once Dad and I got the lights up. And then at some point in the evening, before we went to bed, we got to see the magical presents. Now that's not as big of a deal to me, but boy, when I was little, just like any other kid, that was it. Gotta have those presents. And I think it took a few years before I learned not to shake the presents. my presents to find out, see if I could figure out what was in them. I'd already tried to sneak around the house to see if I could find any that were hidden, and every once in a while I did. Really cool Hot Wheels racetrack with a couple of cars. That was a lot of fun. And I was tickled pink that I'd found it, and now I just had to make sure I didn't give it away that I'd found it. But I think my mom always knew. She was pretty sharp. She always knew. But the presents came out, and there was always a pile of them. And you'd sort through looking for yours and familiarize yourself with exactly how yours were wrapped and what size they were and where they lay geographically. And you'd sit at the end of the couch that was right next to the tree and just kind of stare at them. And I don't know how we managed to go to bed. And going to bed, of course, was ridiculous. But we did. We lived. We made it. And the thing was that, of course, with all my friends who celebrated on the 25th, I might get my presents before them, but at least when they went to bed, they knew the very next thing was presents in the morning. And I knew that the very next thing was get up and wait all day until presents in the evening, 6 o'clock. We always had presents at 6 o'clock. Not 1 minute before, 6 o'clock. So then the big day came, and you couldn't sleep. So you'd get up early, and Mom and Dad would sleep till whenever, and you'd stare at the presents. And you'd do your best to get through the day. And of course, when we were little, my sister and I would always beg for presents. And my folks wised up, and they would buy a simple gift for us. And that was the one we were allowed to open on Christmas Eve in the morning. We wanted something else, but that's the one we got. So you'd get a little whistle or a deck of cards, something boring. At least they wouldn't foist the underwear on you, at least not in the morning. That came later. But it was really no big deal. You'd get to open something, and that was exciting, and each year you hoped that they'd wised up and given you something good, but they didn't. At least not in your opinion, they didn't. But then the worst thing of Christmas came, the absolute worst, the thing I could never stand. You always had to get dressed up. And you couldn't dress up in what you wanted to dress up in. You always had to dress up in what Mom wanted you to get dressed up in. And getting dressed up always involved wool. Oh, I don't know how kids can wear wool. I couldn't. Woolen socks and woolen pants. I don't think anything else was wool, but that was plenty of wool. And when you put it on, it's like sandpaper. It just scratches you. But it gets worse because it doesn't stop scratching you. It keeps scratching. It's better than the Energizer Bunny. It keeps going. As long as you wear that wool, it never softens up. And it was on your feet and on your legs. And if you ever wanted to move, that's what you were moving. And of course, getting dressed up was always a struggle for both me and Mom, because I didn't want to get dressed up and she wanted me to get dressed up. Stand up. Put your arm in your sleeve. Put your arm in your sleeve. Sit still. Stand up. And so forth. And then once you're dressed, and she's at least relieved, you're not, because of the wool. And the only thing you can do to get her back is complain about it. Mom. We've never said that before. Only for me it was usually in Danish. Mor, jeg vil ikke. Mom, I don't want to. But you had to. That was Christmas. And you're stuck with it. And I never really understood, looking back on it, why we got dressed up, because at least when I was little, I don't remember going anywhere. It was the only event that I can remember where you got dressed up and then you didn't go anywhere. But we got dressed up. And then I don't know why they would get you dressed up so early. At least they waited till afternoon, but it was still too early because Mom had been cooking that ham probably since July. It's one of those hams from the butcher's. And it's not cooked. So it had probably been in the sink for several days in a big pot with cold water running over it to thaw it out. And then on Christmas Eve, she'd grab two big forks and heft it out and put it onto the roasting pan and prepare the rub and put it in the oven, and it seemed to bake all day, long. And I don't know what we did during that time. There wasn't anything to do. You couldn't open a present. You couldn't play with any new toys because you hadn't gotten any new toys. You weren't allowed to play with any friends either because it was Christmas Eve, and you didn't call anyone on Christmas Eve because you didn't interrupt their special day. And you didn't play with your sister. So what did you do? You waited. You waited. I don't know how you do that, but you did. And finally, around 4 o'clock, it was dinner time, which was good and bad. But at least there was good in it, unlike the clothes. It always started with herring. There's the bad. We had 2 plates and a square wooden board at the table. A large plate and a small plate. And the small plate was for the herring. And the old people always ate the herring. The old people in this case being my mom and dad. They'd get a piece of Danish pumpernickel, thin, thick bread that they cut in half, and they'd lay out the most smelly fish in some sort of nasty sauce, and then they'd use a knife and fork, because that's how you eat open-faced sandwiches. Use a knife and a fork to slowly eat their herring. And then they'd have a shot of schnapps, aquavit. At least they didn't force me to eat the herring. That was good. And they also let me eat other things, because at the same time we would have a tray of a few different breads and what we called pålæg, a Danish word for things you put on bread, like cheeses and salamis and the leverpostei, the liver pate. So I would have a piece of hardtack and salami. And then I'd have another piece of hardtack and salami. And when I got older, I might have a piece of French bread with liver pate while they ate their herring. But then the good part came. That's when the ham came out. We went straight for the ham. We weren't doing a whole bunch of other things. We didn't have potatoes or piles of vegetables. No, this was ham. The meal was about meat, especially pork. We had something that went with the ham. It was kind of like the herring, bread and sauce. There's a Swedish type of bread called vortbröd. I don't really know what's in it. It's a spice bread, but we only ever had it for Christmas because you take a slice of that and go to the stove where Mom had simmering a pot with some of the ham drippings, juices, mixed with some spices, and you would dip your vortbröd in that and soak it, not so that it would fall apart, but soak it just enough and then put it on your plate, and then you'd put your ham on top of it. And then you'd get to go sit down again and dig out some wonderful Swedish mustard, skånsk senap, and dig in. And the vortbröd, and the sauce in it, and the ham, oh, it was wonderful. And if you wanted, there were a few other things to eat. We would have a Danish sausage that Mom would make called midistapulse, and Danish meatballs. I don't remember Mom ever making Swedish meatballs. Mom was Danish and Dad was Swedish, and I don't think she ever once made Swedish meatballs. But she made Danish meatballs. They're called frigadeller, or friggers, as we called them at home sometimes. Again, though, pork. And the midistapulse, pork. Christmas, all about pork. And Mom would have a few other things like red beets or something that I just wasn't interested in because it was all about the ham and the frikadella and the midistapulse and the dessert. When I was little, we had something that was some sort of rice pudding that to me was disgusting, but everyone loved. And of course, it was Swedish, so you had to eat it. But they learned quick that I wouldn't. But then we had something from the bakery. This was something Mom did not make. It's called Princess Torta. A very light cake, usually made in a log, sometimes made round. But the frosting wasn't frosting, it was marzipan. And our family died for marzipan. For Christmas, we would usually get a little marzipan pig. A little pig made out of marzipan that would sit at your spot. And at some point, you were allowed to eat that. And the cake was marzipan, green-colored marzipan. And in the middle of the cake was also this wonderful, creamy filling that wasn't frosting, but it was creamy. And you always ate your slice, cake first, cake and filling first, and saved your marzipan till last. You savored it. Oh, and of course, fool that I was, I used to always think that as soon as dinner was done, we'd get to the presents. But once dinner was done, no, we have to take out of the table. Oh, okay, I'll take out the table. Well, no, we have to make coffee and tea. I don't drink coffee or tea. Well, we still have to make some. You can go and sit in the living room, but you don't get any presents, because it wasn't 6 o'clock yet. At least when I was little, I don't think my mom teased me as much. As I grew older, she'd often say, I don't really think I have anything for you for Christmas this year. Mom! Well, Christmas at 6, doesn't that seem early? Maybe we should wait. Let's do it tomorrow. We'll do it tomorrow, huh? What do you think? Dad would say, yeah. Okay. No, we'll do it. Mom! Boy, she loved teasing. But it was still 6 o'clock. That was serious. We are not having presents until 6. Because old people, like my mother and father, need to have their coffee and tea, and they need to sit down. And as my father would say, slap av lite, or relax a little bit. And I'm like, I'm relaxed. No, I wasn't. I was maybe sitting, but I wasn't relaxed. And that bloody wool was just not working for me. But I wanted my presents. And finally, after they'd had a little bit of coffee and tea, we would have presents. Just like everybody else, have presents. We didn't do the tear into it. We did one at a time. Someone would be Santa, or Jultomte, and hand out one present at a time. We'd dutifully have to stop and watch as that person opened their gift, read who it was from, any messages, look at it. We'd have to pass it around. I want my presents. But that's like just anybody else. You want your presents when you're little. And it would take us a few hours, and I think that was always nice. I didn't like it then, because I wanted my presents. I think you knew that already. But it took a few hours, and it was a really pleasant evening. And you always got surprises. A bunch of things you didn't ask for, and usually at least one thing you did ask for. And then we would clean up all the wrapping. Mom and Dad would have more coffee and tea. Probably more. Maybe another schnapps. A little bit of whiskey. My sister and I would have some pop. And read our books, play with our toys, listen to music, usually some Swedish Christmas music, and look at the tree. And that was Christmas. And even though Christmas had just begun, according to Dad's tradition, in terms of a family event and getting together and doing things together, not just the presents, but all the other things that went with Christmas, that was Christmas. And we left our tree up. Everyone else took theirs down, maybe on Boxing Day, at least by the 2nd of January. Maybe some folks left their trees up, at least through the New Year. But once the 2nd of January came down, you were pretty well assured that there was nobody in the neighborhood but the Ahlstroms who had their tree up anymore. Even though we lived in a very diverse neighborhood, you really didn't see that. And on the 6th of January, 12 days of Christmas are up on the 5th. So on the 6th, 12 days of Christmas are done, we take the tree down. And the last thing we take down is the lights.
Holiday Readings and Remembrances is a production of Public Radio 90, WNMU-FM, Marquette. If you'd like to hear today's feature again or share it with a friend, go to WNMUFM.org. I'm Kurt Hosworth. Happy holidays.